Hello and welcome to another edition of Teaching Restored. We are your weekly teacher council meeting. I got it right that time.
You did. I'm so impressed.
Yeah, thank you. That's right. I'm Kevin Jones.
And I'm Julie Hilliard. And I want to piggyback off of two podcasts that we've done most recently. So we post these usually in the sequence that we do them. And I've been thinking a little bit about what we talked about last time with regard to helping people have an experience, right? And focusing more on that. And I've also been thinking about what we talked about two times ago with regard to the fact that our job as teachers is not to create emotion, right?
Right.
So if our job is not to create an emotion, but rather to lead people to have an experience with the content, I think we could kind of summarize it as our goal is to promote faith. So let's talk about for just a second what faith is and how we can help promote faith. So I feel like that's kind of going out on a ledge to say that our job is to promote faith. So let's define faith and see if I've actually got that statement right or not.
Okay.
So in the scriptures, how is faith defined? Like just think from the top of your head. I'm asking you to pull phrases out that define faith.
The substance of things not seen and believed, but and hoped for.
Okay. So just things that you can't see or the substance of things. Okay. So what is something that's substantive?
My dessert last night.
Oh, substantial. Or
that was substantial. That was probably more substantial than it should have been, but there was something to that.
There was substance to it.
That's right. All the goodness that was in it.
Okay. I love that. That's a good description actually. What are some other ways that it's described?
That faith is described. Again, if we go back to just, I guess, single words, hope. Okay. Hope is another way of, I mean, hope and faith are a little bit different, but it is a synonym of.
So what is it? But it's hope for what?
Yeah, exactly.
So hope for things not seen.
Not seen, which are true.
Which are true. Okay. So faith gives us a little bit of a, sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off, but that gives us like a little bit of a, what we have our faith in.
Okay.
We want faith to be in
something truth. That's true. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Lectures on faith talk a lot about faith is actually action.
Okay, great. So faith is a verb, like it is putting into practice what you believe, but haven't necessarily seen.
Good.
Or putting into practice something you want more of because you've had an experience with it.
Great.
So all of those things.
Something that you hope for that will just, you know, putting into practice, even though you don't know, like Alma 32 kind of thing, experiment on the word kind of thing. And you're going there and you just try it out, whether you're just hoping, but you're doing something about it.
So you're behaving in a way that could potentially even help the thing that you hope for come to pass.
Correct.
Okay. I love all of that. So one of the things that I learned as I was studying Alma 32 last time is that faith is not emotion. That sometimes we think that in order for us to profess that we have faith, we have to feel certain things. Or like we have to be, we talk about, you know, to make an expression of faith, you have to have been you have to have cried during testimony meeting, which means that now you know what I mean? Like that there's something like connected with your emotion when it comes to faith. But I really like Michael Wilcox talked about this on Follow Him. And he was talking about the idea that it's actually not like faith is something very logical. And he drew this pyramid. Well, in my mind, drew this pyramid. I don't know if he actually drew it or not. And the pyramid talked about like if faith is at the top of the pyramid, you know, what would your faith, what would, you know, be in the rest of the pyramid? And I'm like, it would be, you know, Jesus Christ is the foundation and, you know, all of these different things. But what he broke down was this idea that faith is actually something super logical and rational. It's not just like a feeling or ethereal or believing in things that whatever. Like, he's like, no. Faith is substance. It's reason. It's experience. Hmm. Mm-hmm. It's all of these things. And so he actually put the second part of the pyramid, right? Here's the pyramid. That's not very good shape. There.
Kind of, yeah.
Keep up his faith. Next layer is, he said, evidence, substance, and assurance. And then at the bottom is reason, authority, and experience.
Okay.
And I was like, how do I feel about this? I'm not sure how I feel about this. So I decided, let me experiment upon the word. Let me kind of see how I feel. Because he talked about how part of what faith is based upon is our own experience or the experience of others that we would prescribe some kind of authority to. So in other words, somebody that we trust has had this experience and we're like, wow, I trust that. Prophets have told us things. We've read it in the scriptures. I trust that authority. And that helps to build my faith.
Sure. Right.
I've had an experience with, you know, when I try this principle, it works. And so it promotes my faith. So I started to look at faith as kind of this bridge, if you will, between a belief that we have and coming to a place of knowledge. And so faith is kind of like this bridge.
I like between that.
A belief and knowledge. And obviously, I would say that none of us is going to get to a place of knowledge on a lot of things related to spiritual concepts and principles in this life. Like that we are constantly searching for and having faith in things, but that we, this is as defined by Alma, don't necessarily have perfect knowledge in very many things, if any, while in this life.
Sure. Yeah, I agree.
So that's where faith comes into play. Okay. So now I started thinking about Alma's, you know, these different action words that he gives us in Alma chapter 32. So he talks about faith and he leads into it with all of these action words. Starting, like, if you look at the end of verse 26, he's like, you cannot know of their surety at first. You know, as I have said concerning faith, it's not to have a perfect knowledge, even so with my words. Like, you're going to hear some things from me, and you're not necessarily going to have a perfect knowledge of them out of the gate. We're going to talk about some things in class, and you're not necessarily going to have a perfect knowledge of them. Don't sweat it. No, I mean, I don't have a perfect knowledge, and I'm teaching the class, right? But you cannot know of their surety at first unto perfection any more than faith is a perfect knowledge. Like, what we're trying to do here is promote your faith, grow your faith, grow.
Can I throw something in there? I had never thought of this before. And I love this. He talks about faith and then he talks about perfect knowledge.
Yeah.
Almost nowhere in the scriptures does it talk about perfect knowledge.
Right.
I had never thought of that before. We're always talking about faith, and that's all Heavenly Father expects us to have is faith. It's not to have that perfect knowledge. And sometimes I think we beat ourselves up. I don't know it better. I don't know. That is, you're on the bridge. You're on the bridge. Keep going.
Good job on the bridge. Hang out on the bridge. It's stable.
Yes.
It's a stable bridge.
I love that analogy for that. That's great, Julie.
It's not going to fall into the ocean like that one did. What was the bridge that fell onto
the barge? In Baltimore.
That is not faith. Faith is a solid, stable bridge between belief and knowledge. Okay.
Thank you.
Great connection. I love that you just said that. So all of these action words that Alma uses in verse 27, throw some of them out.
Awake, arouse.
Okay. Good.
Experiment.
Good. Keep going.
Exercise.
Excellent.
Desire.
Good.
Believe.
Good.
Give place.
Excellent. All of them. Excellent. So good. These are all, so faith is built on action. Mm-hmm. So let's take the word experiment, because then he's going to go in chapter 32 and he's going to talk about experimenting upon the word.
Right.
So I'm thinking about the steps of a scientific experiment. Okay. if our job as teachers is to help promote faith, we want to take everyone in class, I would say, through experiences where we are experimenting upon the word.
Yes.
Like, we are not coming in and saying, I have perfect knowledge, take my perfect knowledge, build your faith on my perfect knowledge. No. Let's say, let's together experiment upon the word so that we can all come to a place where we have an experience with this principle that grows our faith. Okay. So if you're thinking about the scientific method, here are the steps. And I want to just kind of lead us through this with chapter 32.
Okay.
So looking at verse 28, you always start with a question when it comes to a scientific experiment.
Yes.
Okay. What is the question in verse 28? You got to kind of read it just a little bit.
Okay. Let's see. Give place that a seed may be planted in your heart. Behold, if it's a true seed or a good seed, if you do not cast it out by your unbelief, that ye will resist the Spirit of the Lord. Behold, it will begin to swell within your breasts. And when you feel those swelling motions, you will begin to say within yourselves, it must be a good seed. Or the word is good, beginneth to enlarge my soul, beginneth to enlighten my understanding, and be delicious unto me. Now, what was your question again?
What is the question that they are starting with, that the scientific experiment is starting with?
Will, I'm going to throw this out, I don't know if this is correct, but will the seed grow?
Okay. Is it a good seed?
Okay, good.
Will the seed grow? Great. What's the seed?
That thought or that thing that you have hope in or believe possibly might be true.
Excellent. Okay. So in this case with Alma, I think that sometimes we think that the seed is faith itself. So the seed is not faith. It is that thing that you. Okay. In this case, it's Jesus Christ. Mm-hmm. Is Jesus Christ for real? Like, is he, like, that's what he's trying to talk to them about, is Jesus Christ as their savior. So you start with, this is the seed good? If the seed, because he actually goes on, I'm actually going to show you this. Hold on, where's the verse that says this? I can't even remember. I think it's in 33. Oh, here it is, 33:23. He says, you know, I desire that ye shall plant this word in your hearts. So which is, you know, plant this seed basically in your hearts. Mm-hmm. And he said, this word. So I'm like, what's this word? Go back to verse 22. This is kind of a John, by the way, insight, by the way.
Okay.
I can't say better for it. But back to verse 22, what is this word? Look at verse 22. What does it tell us?
Cast your eyes and begin to believe on the Son of God, that he shall redeem his people, shall suffer and die to atone for their sins, rise again. Basically, the doctrine of Christ on Christ's end. Yes.
Perfect. So if the seed that he's encouraging them to plant in this experiment is Jesus Christ, think about, for us, that is the equivalent of saying, is Christ real? And I think that sometimes when it comes to our classes, we try and take on bigger questions and not primary questions.
Mm-hmm.
And so part of what we need to be sure of is that if we're trying to promote faith, that we are working to experiment upon the right questions.
Great.
Okay. So then second one is second step in the scientific process is to do some background research, right? And so that's literally a lot of what we're doing as we prepare. And we want to make sure that we're looking at the right sources for our background research. And so the resources that we're bringing to class should not be podcasts that are not, you know, endorsed by the church, like just our random stuff. We want to make sure that we're pulling from words of the prophets and apostles, general conference talks. We just have to be so careful. Like, I'm really clear because sometimes I'll pull on resources from different books that I've read or whatever. And I'm really careful to say, this is a book I've read. This is not something that, you know, came from prophets and apostles. I'm quoting so-and-so, mm-hmm. you know, making that clear so that you separate a little bit. But I think taking people through a little bit of your research is a really great thing to do. So then the next part of the scientific experiment is that you come up with a hypothesis. Okay. So looking at 32 verse 40, this is kind of, oh no, not 40. I think it's 39. Oh wait, what is it? Hold on. Oh yeah. It just, oh no, that's not it. Dang it. I don't remember what it was. Oh, why? Because I'm in the wrong chapter. Okay. So the idea is that the hypothesis is that this is a good seed, that this seed is going to grow. Maybe that is for you. Looking for, oh yeah. Looking forward with an eye of faith to the fruit thereof. So mm-hmm. this seed is going to produce fruit.
Okay.
That's the hypothesis. Okay. And that's the equivalent. And this is a really, really important thing of saying, I choose to believe this. And so when we're going into our classes as a learner, part of what we need to be doing is saying, I am choosing not to criticize, not to poke holes in, not to, you know, take their evidence and try and squish it, but I want to nurture this hypothesis. I'm going to choose to participate. I'm going to choose to believe. And if there are things that need to be corrected, that's great. That's part of an experiment, is that you will eventually poke holes in it, but you come up with a hypothesis together as a class that you are working to prove, not disprove. Right?
Right.
And I think sometimes in classes, there is some focus on disproving, poking holes in, playing devil's advocate, which is, there is a place for it. But the place for it is not when you are engaging together on a hypothesis. Like, you together are choosing to move the conversation forward,
mm-hmm.
uplift and edify together. Good. So then we design an experiment. Okay. So then you decide, how am I going to experiment upon this? John 7, 17. Okay, hold on. Library. John 7, 17.
Okay.
Want to read it?
If any man will do his will, he shall know of the doctrine, whether it be of God or whether I speak of myself.
Okay. So when we're talking about this phase here, we're starting to talk about outside of the classroom a little bit, because it's not like you can talk about a principle and you can practice it right that instance, right? What can you do within a classroom if you are thinking about designing and performing this experiment? What could you do in the classroom that would kind of imitate this phase, so to speak? Any thoughts?
So you have the hypothesis and you want to go prove this hypothesis now. Mm-hmm. So you can come up with ideas of how to do that. Mm-hmm. And talk about experiences in the past that others have had, where they may have had something similar to learn from those about how to go experiment from this point forward.
Excellent. So where would you find some of those? You'd find them in the minds of the people, like people that are in your class might have had an experience with something themselves mm-hmm. that they could share. You're also going to find them in scriptures, like all over the place, drawing upon other places where people have had experiences with this principle, right?
Right.
So then the next step is to observe and collect data. And part of, again, you, as you're going through and reading stories and scriptures where people have had experiences with this, notice stuff. Okay, so look at 32 verses 30 through 31.
Okay.
Okay. You're looking at this and it's like, okay, the seed swelleth and sprouteth, mm-hmm. it's beginning to grow. Okay. Oh, you know what? Like it's actually, I see how the people, there was a pattern where they obeyed the commandments and then they were prospered. Okay. They didn't obey the commandments and then they were cut off. And that's symbolically speaking, right? Mm-hmm. So if every seed, looking at verse 31, for every seed bringeth forth fruit unto its own likeness. Okay, so we're looking to see what people did and then what kind of fruit that thing that they did produced.
Sure.
Right? So we start noticing stuff.
I think that's a really key point, because you're not going to experiment on the word, have an outcome that it proves contrary to what it was saying. I mean, it's right. If it's an apple, it came from an apple tree.
Right.
It's not going to be different than that. Right.
Right.
So, you know, that the whole tree is an apple tree. Mm-hmm. In that same way, right? If we know that it comes from God, if it's good, we know it comes from God, period. That's what it is.
Right, right, exactly. And I think that we sometimes say that phrase, if it's good, it comes from God, a lot. And so for us to take a step back and look at where, in cases in the scriptures and in cases in people's lives, where they have exercised faith, it has produced this fruit. And look, oh, I know where that came from. It came from a belief in this. It came from trying this. Hey, that is good.
Yes.
And we know that comes from God. And look at the fruit that it produced. Like making some of those connections, like in a very literal way, can help our faith to be more reasonable, more substantive, more logical, more rational, more, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Okay, so then you start also, oh, this is another part. If you look at verse 42, it talks about the idea that part of this observing and collecting data is to actually pluck it and taste it.
Like try it out.
But like sample, like this is at Costco going and getting samples and then being like, yeah, I want more of that. Uh-huh. Right. And that is part of what we again have to draw on our experience in the classroom setting to say, oh my gosh, I sampled that and oh, it was yeah. So yummy.
Or maybe,
right? And expressing.
Maybe like when our kids make cookies, before the cookie is made, they're always eating the cookie dough.
Or their mother.
Or maybe mother is as well. Understood. And you say, no, this is good. All right. This experiment is coming along very nicely.
I am sampling it and I now want the baked product. I will need both. Right? Excellent. And then that leads us to be able to draw a conclusion, right? So look at, for example, 32, the end of 28, where it's saying, oh yeah, this is delicious.
Mm-hmm.
I'm concluding this is a good seed. It tastes freaking awesome.
Mm-hmm.
Look at 42. Oh man, this is a good seed. It is precious. It's sweet above all that is sweet. It's white above all that is white. It's pure above all that is pure. I conclude this is a good seed, right? You draw this conclusion.
Yeah.
And then at the end of a scientific experiment, you also actually share your conclusion. You don't hide it. You share it.
Mm-hmm.
And so I thought about this. So this is, if we're trying to help people progress in terms of their faith, strengthen their faith, right? We want to, in our classrooms, have experiments. So it sounds very much like experiences. They're kind of both.
Yes.
Yes and yes, right? So here is an interesting thing. This is kind of, I hope that this makes sense, but I want to try and make it make sense. So fast forward just a teensy weensy bit. As part of this whole convo here, you've got Alma teaching all of this stuff, and then Amulek is going to start to teach, right? Amulek actually walks them through an example of this process. And I didn't recognize this before, but it's so stinking cool. So this, I think, is where the instructive part of this comes into play, because you're going to have Amulek who's going to teach about Christ. Okay? He's teaching people. We're talking about teaching people. And he's going to, in his teaching, walk them through this. Look at chapter 34.
Mm-hmm.
Now, look at verse 5. Start there. Read it.
Yes. And we have beheld that the great question which is in your minds is whether the word be in the Son of God or whether there shall be no Christ. Binary question right there.
Yep. And a question. You start your scientific experiment with a question.
The most important question.
Probably the most important question. So then if you reflect back, because we, you know, obviously can't go through all of this in this little podcast, but there's a lot of background research that takes place that they're walked through with Alma and his lecture just before in chapter 33. Okay. He's going to talk about Moses. He's going to talk. So he is basically saying, here's some of what I've read. Here's some of what I've taught. Here's what Zenas taught. Here's what Moses taught. Here's what their experience was. So he's going to kind of do a little bit of
good
of that. So now look at 34 verse 6. Mm-hmm. What's the hypothesis?
And ye also beheld that my brother has proved to you in many instances that the word is in Christ unto salvation. So the hypothesis is that for salvation, it is through Christ.
Perfect. Okay. And then he's going to go through in verses 8 through 15, and he's going to talk about that hypothesis. Mm-hmm. And he's going to talk about some of the background research. So he's going through it there. So then in 34, 17 through 27,
mm-hmm.
he's going to design and perform an experiment. Okay?
So good.
So kind of skim that. He's talking about, look, exercise your faith unto repentance. Cry unto God, pray, humble yourselves. Like, this is how you're designing. This is what the experiment's going to look like. This is the designing part of it, right? And then he's going to start encouraging them to perform this experiment.
That's good.
So then it's really interesting because I think that he's basically saying, be engaged, be humble. Be sincere in trying to prove this hypothesis. And again, I just have to make the point that when we're in our classes sometimes, like I know that there are some controversial things within our church. Like, there are things that people struggle with related to policy. There are things that people struggle with related to church history. And I think that it's appropriate to talk about those things. But when we bring them up, in an effort to like show that we're not afraid, or to bring them up to try and like, if we're participating, I don't think you're going to do this as a teacher, but to try and kind of trip things up, that's not the spirit of this experiment upon the word. And one of the biggest things that I've noticed is that sometimes when we get derailed by those conversations, the spirit leaves.
Mm-hmm.
And so we have to remember, and this may sound naive and a little bit manipulative, so let me explain it. We are trying to prove a hypothesis, not to disprove it. We are choosing together to have faith in and believe certain things, and choosing to exercise that faith.
Sure.
We are not choosing to try and justify jumping ship. We are not mm-hmm. choosing to try. And I think that sometimes we can get derailed in the discussion that we're having in class by some of those attempts to poke holes.
Good point. So, that's a good focus. I like that a lot.
Okay. So focusing on belief. So then collecting data, right? So look at 34, 28 through 29.
Okay.
So he's saying, look, this is not all. So after you've done these things, you've performed an experiment, you've designed and performed an experiment. If you then are going to turn away the needy and the naked and not visit the sick and the afflicted and impart of your substance, he's like, if you're not going to do these things and actually start collecting data, you're not going to have any evidence to support or refute your hypothesis. And so he's saying, look, collect data. Look, remember to be charitable. Remember not to cast these things out. Start to like notice things. See if what we're talking about here leads to a change in you. He's saying, if you're not going to change, like, then it's not going to produce fruit.
Right.
Like,
right.
You have to see if you do all of these things, notice how it changes you. Notice how you become different. That's how you're collecting data.
So what I kind of hear you say here is that without the change, there cannot be the faith.
Right. Your lack of faith, excuse me, your lack of change in you does not disprove the hypothesis.
Yeah.
If you're not doing something.
Okay. I found this on the web for your lack of change in you does not disprove the hypothesis.
Thank
Check
you.
It
oh,
out.
Siri.
Thank you, Siri.
Siri's been baptized.
Yeah, I guess. But do you hear what I'm saying? Like, this is a little bit heady, but the idea is that if you are not going to actually perform the experiment, if you're not going to actually design and perform the experiment, meaning do something different, then it's not going to lead to change.
Mm-hmm.
But it's you that skipped a step. It's not the hypothesis that's false.
Right.
Does that make sense?
Yes, it does.
Okay, so I'm going to like wrap, kind of finish this. I feel like I've talked a ton and not really engaged, but I promise.
We're good.
I just want to put the spot. Okay. So then that gives you, Amulek is going to say, here is the time to draw our conclusion and look at verses 30 and 31. What does he say allows you to draw this conclusion? What's going to happen to you that lends you to draw this conclusion?
That lends you to draw the conclusion?
Yeah. So sorry, you're going to draw a conclusion. How do you draw that conclusion?
Well, I'm kind of taking this on the negative side by not hardening your hearts any longer.
Right.
Is one way I see.
So then look back in verse 30 really quickly. He's like, look, after you've got this, after you see all this data, you've received so many witnesses, you're having these experiences, you're noticing the change in you, you're seeing that the scriptures testify of these things. And guess what it's bringing forth? It's bringing forth fruit unto repentance. Yea, I would that you would not come forth and harden your hearts any longer, basically. And so he's like, now is the time to prepare to meet God. If you will repent and harden not your hearts, immediately shall the great plan of redemption be brought about unto you. So the conclusion is what? What is the conclusion that he's drawing here?
That once you experiment, you find the fruit, eat it, use it.
And this plan of redemption is personal. It will immediately be brought about unto you. That's his conclusion. He's like, the word is in Jesus Christ. This is a good seed. I conclude that all that he promised will be efficacious in your life. It will take effect and impact you personally. So this may be, it's maybe me stretching just a little bit, but what I felt like came out of this was that Amulek walked them through this process. And he's like poking, he's saying, if you're not going to do any part of this, you're not going to get the reward of your faith being strengthened by it. He's like, you can conclude that Christ is not only real, but he is your personal savior. And his plan of redemption will be effective for you. That is my conclusion. But hold on, Turbo. If you're going to speed past experimenting upon it yourself, you're not going to experience the joy of that redemption. Right? And so the point that I want to make has to do with the fact that we want in our classes to create an experiment and walk people through that as much as possible to help promote, progress, develop faith. And it's faith, it's based on substance, evidence, reason, experience. It's not based on just having the Sunday school answers
right
to the questions. It's based on real things happening to real people because they are working to apply this belief that they have that the seed is going to produce fruit.
I love this. Writing down a couple notes here.
Okay. Sorry, that wasn't like a lot of discussion, but it just was something that was like, really, I've been thinking about this since I studied this lesson, because I'm not like, I said this in my class when I taught it, I'm not like a super emotional person. Like I feel like I don't always feel feelings when other people feel them. And so there have been times in my life where I've actually invalidated my own faith because it wasn't leading me to a specific emotion.
Sure.
And so part of the reason that this felt so personal to me and like it spoke to me so much is because the logic and the reason do. That's part of how I receive personal revelation, is with clarity of thought. Mm-hmm. And not with this burning in my bosom. I don't even know when people describe that, how that would feel in me, because I don't experience it that way. Right? Sure. And so I'm like, you know, certain other physical things will happen, like my heart will pound or whatever, but I don't experience that at the same way. And so I've invalidated at times in my life, my own faith, because I haven't felt the same thing as everybody else.
That's interesting. And so
this idea really resonated with me because it felt like, oh, guess what? My way of having faith with, you know, exercising my faith and experimenting, this rational, real, substantive process yields the same results that, you know, in me. And I don't know, I feel like I'm just saying, I'm not describing it very well, but it was very validating to me to think, well, wait a minute, I can wrap my head and my heart around the gospel of Jesus Christ. And both of those things are important. It's not, it is reasonable. It is rational.
That's good.
We're not crazy.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah. I've never consciously thought about that before, about how there is a bunch of reason that is in that. You know, I guess I've lived that and I've done it that way before, but I've never thought of it that way. That yes, I think, you know, the emotion, however we experience the emotion with the spirit, that'll come, but there's a whole bunch of work. There's a whole bunch of thought process. There's reasoning, there's experimenting, all of that before that gets us there.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
That's a good point.
Whatever the feeling is right. If it comes from the spirit, it's going to feel good. It's going to lead to peace. It's going to lead to joy. And however you express that or however you experience that is valid.
Oh, yeah. Oh.
Right?
Mm-hmm. More quote, more thoughts.
More notes. More thoughts. Okay. Do you want to share any of those thoughts? Or
yeah, maybe I shall. Maybe I shall. Okay. Thought number one. As you said this, and you kind of alluded to this, the way I kind of frame this is that there are a number of points of failure in there. Right? If you have a hypothesis but don't act on it, don't test it out, then what good is it? If you act it out and find the hypothesis is true, but then don't eat the fruit thereof, what's the point? You're not going to get it, right? And so as maybe as a leader or someone who works with others and trying to help them build their faith, because again, we can't build others' faith. No. They have to build their own faith. There's no way that we can build their faith, right? No. So as we help them build their own faith, we need to think about kind of those steps of what you're looking at. And if they kind of fall off that, we got to think, okay, where did it break down?
Right.
What was missing in there? Because if they did this, this will happen. I mean, right. It even says immediately, right?
Right.
It's going to happen. So Where is the point of failure? And I think that might be a great way to look at, and as you were talking about each of these steps, and I started taking it from a point of failure paradigm there, I could think of times in my life and in others' lives where it broke down at that one point. And that was it right there.
Yes. You know what's cool about what you're pointing out right now is that you're getting at, and this is what I think I missed and what I was kind of blah, 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 through just a minute ago, is that you aren't trying to disprove, like I said, the hypothesis. But part of what you're trying to do in the discussion is talk about these points of failure.
Sure.
Right? Yes. Like if you encourage people to jump from belief to, and you will have knowledge, then that we're building on the wrong thing. Or if you're saying, here's the hypothesis, draw a conclusion, then like maybe, I mean, that's a little bit what we do with our kids. We say, this is the hypothesis. This is the conclusion. And we think that they are going to just embrace the conclusion.
Right.
But part of what we realize as they become teenagers is that our job as parents is to support and allow them to design their own experiments and perform their own experiments. And so that is more where we're engaging in the process and helping them to collect data, meaning to notice things. And so if we can talk about the points of failure, you know, with our kids, with our students, with the people that are in our classrooms when we're leading a discussion, talk about, well, what did you notice? And they're like, well, I didn't really pay attention. You know, like asking those questions that are part of the experiment and not skipping steps in how we're explaining things.
Yes.
Right?
I think this goes a lot toward missionary work because you're watching in real time people do this.
Right.
And you're leading them down this path. And then you see some people like, okay. What's the point of failure? Where in this process did it break down? Well, I really didn't read, but, or I didn't pray about it, but, or yeah, you know, I believe that, but I'm just going to keep doing what I'm doing. Whoa, there's another point of failure. Right. And we can recognize that in our friends, then we can more perfectly, I'll say perfectly, but I'll use that anyways, more perfectly address the issue that they're having right at that moment that is stopping them.
Excellent. Don't you think that's true? Not just of people who like friends, investigators, like, I don't want to say that, but I'm trying to kind of differentiate people who are just coming to start to study about the gospel. But I think that that's also true that in our own lives, part of what we need to acknowledge is that not everybody's faith is in the same place when we're in a classroom, and that there are a lot of people who are experiencing breakdowns. They're experiencing points of failure when they're sitting there in Sunday school, when they're sitting there in an institute class, whatever. And so part of going through this process and acknowledging all of the parts of it is that they can then also identify in themselves some of these breakdowns and some of these points of failure. And if we're talking about it and allowing like space for that, I think that that's part of the thing is if we remember that an experiment is in part, like you're not coming out with a law when you are performing a scientific experiment in most cases, but just because you don't have a law at the end of it does not mean that you should dismiss the hypothesis entirely. And so you have to go back to your points of failure again and address those points of failure until you get it right and find the right conclusion. I'll be honest, I had drawn some conclusions in my life that I've had to completely throw out and go back and re-examine the hypothesis.
Sure.
Especially as it's come to issues that I had confused church culture with doctrine.
Right.
And so there are things, I mean, I'm of that generation where the shift in thinking has been made and the separation between doctrine and culture have really kind of like you've tried to extrapolate one from the other.
Right.
And that's been a hard process. You have to have patience with some of us and people who are just the generation ahead of me. I have to have patience with them because that wasn't necessarily as much of a challenge for them. It was just this.
The way it is.
And so, yes. So part of what I've had to do is kind of say, oh, some of my conclusions weren't 100% spot on. Like, doesn't mean that the hypothesis, I debunked the hypothesis. It means that I've got to conduct a different experiment.
Maybe ask a new question.
Sometimes ask a new question.
Right.
Great.
Yeah. So I wonder if we can take, if we're teaching a class, I don't know that I'm going to say this correctly, but let's find out if I can even make sense of this. I see in my mind's eye that I take a class that I'm teaching and we say, guess what? We're going to be scientists and we're going to figure this out and we're going to go through this together. What is something that we all know or need to have faith in? This, okay, what are we going to do about this? And then walk everyone through these steps and then, and help them create a knowledge or testimony of that thing and say, hey, we're all in this together. We're all learning this together. Let's go through this and share ideas and share conclusions and share. And it and the class is a petri dish where something is actually happening and you're going through it together and learning together. And becomes, you know, I think of a schoolroom scientific laboratory. Thank you. Yeah. Right. Where everyone is trying different things and they're all doing it together. But why can't we do that with matters of faith?
Right. Right. And I mean, what I'm actually, so first of all, you said something where you kind of implied, and I know you didn't mean to, that a testimony, in order to have a testimony, you have to have knowledge. And that's,
I know that.
So I just want to point out that you can have a testimony of something without having a perfect knowledge as defined by Helma. But I think we can do that, not even explicitly. Like, in other words, say, let's be scientists. Like, I think what you are suggesting is exactly what I'm kind of encouraging, which is that instead of leading with all of the conclusions, that part of what we're trying to do is help people draw those conclusions themselves.
Yes. Oh, I love that.
That's why when we're going in, I love your approach to this. It has to do with questions, right? If you're encouraging people to experiment upon the word, part of what you're doing is encouraging them to come up with more and more questions. And you're leading with a hypothesis that you're trying to prove, right? So it is a faith filled discussion, and those questions will help to increase, to get people thinking about, to figure out how they can kind of wrestle with even sometimes matters of faith.
Yeah.
Don't draw the conclusions for them.
Right. Yeah.
Let them draw the conclusions.
I think a lot of classes are like that though. Here's the premise. Here's the question. Here's a hypothesis. Here's a solution. All right, we're all good. Right. Let's go. We're done.
Right.
Move on.
And this connects to the last episode that we recorded where you were talking about invitations specifically. Yes. You were talking about them under the umbrella of creating experiences.
Correct.
And so part of what this is an invitation, moving people in the direction of conducting their own experiments, noticing data, collecting data and drawing their own conclusions. Like I said, a lot of that happens outside the classroom, but part of what we're doing in the classroom is looking at other examples of that process.
So I said that there was going to be a part two about experiences.
Yeah.
You pretty much did it. This is it. No, that's good.
I didn't even know, Kevin. I didn't even know.
I know you didn't. And that's what I think is so beautiful about this is that it really is. The part two was, okay, well, part one is the invitation. Part two was, how do you have them help? How do you have them create their own experiences outside of class? And this is exactly it right here. And then how do you guide them through having those experiences? That is it. And going back to the last episode, we can talk about content. We can talk about what we teach. If we don't do anything about it, then like he says here, what good is it? That's a point of failure. We need to jump in and realize that we're going to do something about it. Yes, of course.
Right. And you know, that's what's great. Interesting, Kevin, is that I'm really like, it's becoming even more clear in my mind that our job as teachers is actually to do the first steps of it. It's to really set up good primary questions that we're working to answer together to come up with a hypothesis. And then most of the rest of it, like giving some background research, doing some background research is also part of that discussion. And then figuring out, maybe even designing potential experiments, but the actual experimenting, collecting data, noticing what's happening, et cetera, and drawing conclusions is going to happen outside of the classroom. And so we are setting up and encouraging people to conduct those experiments.
Here's an idea of something to do exactly what you're saying.
Okay.
And I'm coming up with this. So this is raw. This may not even be good. Well, let's find out. So in a class, we say, let's say it's a youth class.
Okay.
All right, everyone. We need to have faith in Jesus Christ. And there are a number of things of faith in Jesus. I mean, there's faith that the Book of Mormon is true, that we have prophets on the earth, that, you know, so many different things. What do you guys want to focus on? Let's focus on the Book of Mormon. Okay. Now here we do. And we lead them through that. And together we're going to hopefully, and here's our hypothesis. Here's our question. Here's, you know, we go through the research and here's our hype and create that all together and then say, good. Now come back in 2 weeks and let's talk about what we've learned, what evidences. Mm-hmm. And they go out and they come back and they share with each other and collectively they start creating a testimony for themselves of that thing. And we just rinse and repeat, and we keep doing that.
I love that. I would add to that, because I think I would add to that, that make sure you text them several times during the course of that 2 weeks to remind them what it is that they're going to be doing. Logistics. And then the other thing that I thought of is, like, I have something that's happened recently that I actually just found out about it today. We've got High Adventure and Girls Camp and things going on. And so as I've been talking to people from High Adventure and Girls Camp, I'm learning about, some of the conversations that are taking place as the kids stay up super late. Mm-hmm. And it surprised me that some of them are about principles of the gospel and that they are teaching each other by talking about their experiments. Mm-hmm. They don't know that they're doing that, right? But because you don't have kids that as youth, they're not preaching at each other. In fact, they're really hesitant to do that.
Sure.
But they're talking about their experiments with principles of the gospel. And I think that's beautiful. That's another thing that you can bring to the classroom, is to get people not just to share their conclusions, but to share their experiments.
I like that. That's really good. Yeah, because we talk so much about, well, how do you know? How do you know? And the result of it, well, let's figure out how you got through that.
Right. Because it's like, how do you know is saying, what's your conclusion? What's your conclusion? What's your conclusion? That is less impactful than how'd you get there?
Yeah. Right. Because your conclusion won't hit me the way it hit you.
Right. And I'm not going to even be able to draw that conclusion without going through my own process.
Right.
Yep. So help prompt the process.
Yeah. Prompt the process. There's the title. Prompt
there we go.
Prompt the process. Okay, so here's another piece I want to add to this whole thing. So we talked about, and Julie, I'm going to need your help on this one.
Okay.
Because I want to say this correctly and be sensitive at the same time, and I don't do either of those things very well sometimes. So I'm going to need your help on this. I saw a post on Facebook from an old friend And I don't remember, I have it written down somewhere, but I don't remember exactly what it said. But basically it says, God is love. God loves everyone, right? This thing right here, that isn't love. And so suddenly what I realized is that we all see love in different ways. And if we take a look at it and say, well, this isn't happening here, so God isn't there. Because I don't recognize that as a form of love for me. For example, I mean, this is so rudimentary, but going back, I've said this I brought this up in another episode previously to this, that someone, and I should really find this conference talk, someone said, started his conference talk with, would you ever hurt your children? Of course you would.
I know, right? Exactly what you're talking about, right?
When you go help, when you take them to the doctor and give them vaccines. Yeah. you actually are hurting your children, but it's actually the good thing for them, right? Okay. And that actually is love. Well, I may not recognize that as a kid. I may not recognize that in love and say, my parents don't love me. Well, no, we do love you. And that is why we are doing that. So when we talk about, when you talked about at the beginning, making sure that the thing that we are trying, our faith is having hope and belief in something that is true, we need to make sure that when we are experimenting on the words, that it is true. It is, and we think that is so obvious. Well, yeah, duh, right? Of course, we're going to base it off something that we believe is true and factual and the way God works. Well, put it into practice and it's a lot different. It can be actually pretty difficult to make sure that that thing is true, especially given the philosophies and thoughts of men right now and going every which way with a lot of different things. We need to make sure that we're looking at it from a celestial perspective, from a heavenly perspective, and making sure that what we're experimenting on, that thing from that perspective, is true, not just our interpretation of what might be true. Did that help make any sense at all?
Yes, I think so. Let me see if I can summarize what I hear you saying. That sometimes we can dismiss something as not being true, not because it isn't true, but because of the way that we're defining it or the way that we're viewing it or the way that we're, and I think like your example actually is a really good one, because I mean, I hear this a lot. I hear people talking about God is love and I don't see this thing as being loving, right?
Yes, I hear that all the time.
And so part of what we're doing in these experiments is talking about how we understand certain things, right? Like, we don't want to skip over the nature of God, including the idea that God is love, if we are trying to prove that God is our Heavenly Father in our experiment. So it's being willing to talk about what all of those things mean, I think.
Yes.
I don't know. I think I understand what you're saying, but I don't know how to articulate it either.
Right.
But like that, the example that you brought up is one that is difficult to wrestle with. But if we lead with what is false, like saying that this is not loving and therefore God can't be in it, we're not working. You don't try. In fact, there's a quote by Lawrence Corbridge.
He's so good.
I know. It's so good. Let me see if I can find it really fast. He said, you cannot prove a positive by disproving every negative. You cannot prove the church is true by disproving every claim made against it.
Right.
Broad strategy. Ultimately, there has to be affirmative proof. And so you're not looking to prove that God is not in this thing, you're looking to prove a positive, if that makes sense. There has to be affirmative proof. And with the things of God, affirmative proof finally and surely comes by revelation through the Spirit and the power of the Holy Ghost. And so that, I don't know, I think that that's, like, we have to be really careful that we're looking to prove a positive and not disprove a negative to prove a positive.
Makes sense.
Does it?
It absolutely does. I think the difficult part in that comes when the rubber hits the road and we're actually doing it, and we have to check ourselves to make sure that we're not doing that, because we could think that, oh, we're, you know, and it may make total sense. We may say, well, that isn't right. And all of a sudden that disproves it. And emotionally that may take over, but we just broke the whole process and we have to go back to it.
Hold on. I've got another quote. Let me see if I can find it. Talks about, where is it that I found? I have another quote that talks about the idea that we don't dismiss a theory just because we don't know 100% that it's a law. Mm. What I'm trying to say is that you don't dismiss your hypothesis because one thing you come across doesn't line up. You've got to examine, where was the breakdown in the experiment again? You don't just trash the hypothesis because you come across a stumbling block.
Yes.
And I think that what I hear you talking about is, here's a stumbling block. Now I'm going to trash the hypothesis. There's no way that God is in this thing because I just stumbled here.
Right.
So go back and try and analyze where the breakdown potentially was.
So that reminds me of Kevin Pearson, who's a member of the 70. And I remember him in a talk, he mentioned something about, he has a question and he doesn't know how to solve that question. So if I remember the analogy correctly, what he said is basically, he says, I put it in a box and I put it on the shelf. It's still there. I don't have the answer to it, but I keep pulling it out every now and then and looking at it and make sure, but someday I will get that answered, but it's not right now. But I'm not going to allow that to try to disprove everything else, because I have so much evidence here. That one thing that I just may look like it disproves it. It doesn't. I will get to that, and I will figure that one piece out at some point.
You know, it's interesting because this, and I don't want to get off track, but I think using this language of the scientific experiment makes this feel relevant as well. And I think that what he was talking about is that some of our questions, I don't want to be naive, because there's this guy that I'm really good friends with that actually gets really frustrated when people are like, we'll have the answers eventually, and that's enough to satisfy me about everything. Mm-hmm. And he's like, no, these are hard questions to me. These are things that are rocking my faith. And that feels like a really dismissive answer.
Sure.
And part of what I go back to, because I'm comfortable with certain things categorically putting them on the shelf, I'm not comfortable doing that when it comes to what Lawrence Corbridge would call primary questions.
Sure.
And I don't think any of us should be comfortable with
agree.
That.
Yes.
And so part of what we're doing is saying, I can shelve the secondary question while I work to deepen my testimony of the primary question. And I know that as I come to understand my answers to the primary questions, that my secondary questions will either get answered in that process, or they will pale in comparison, and I literally don't even care if it ever is, you know, seen again. And that shelf, I can ignore it, like, for reals. Mm-hmm. And so I think that we have to be clear that we would never encourage anyone to shelve a primary question. Those are the ones that are worth experimenting upon. And so part of what you have to ask yourself as you're even designing, like, thinking about conducting an experiment of faith is, am I starting with the right question?
Right.
And I think that's a super important point that you just made.
I'm glad you brought that that language up that Elder Corbridge kind of delineated of, is it a primary question or a secondary question? And you're right. Those primary questions we need to get answered. And those are the ones we need to focus on and be solid in. And I do, and I agree with you. I think some of those, answering some of those and being really solid in those will answer some of those secondary or pale in comparison to where it doesn't matter anymore. That's not even an issue. I made it an issue, and actually it's really not an issue, but you're right.
And we in class should never tackle leading everyone through some kind of an experiment about a secondary question. As we're, you know, approaching studying the Doctrine and Covenants again, I think that sometimes we're tempted to conduct an experiment upon something related to church history and just kind of say, and here's all this data and here's all this research and here's all this whatever. Are we leading people through a discussion and an experiment based on the right question or not? And that's our responsibility.
Yes. That's good. Something like, where did the Book of Mormon take place? Well, no, yeah. That's, if you want to do that on your own, cool. That, you know, there's nothing wrong with that. Go do the research. There's a lot of research out there. Wonderful. Go do some more research if you want to look at what they've done. But in our class, that's not what we're focusing on. We're focusing on the primary questions.
Which is the Book of Mormon true?
Right. Right. So. The real basic stuff. So good.
Awesome.
Thank you, Julie. This was great. I love how every now and then we you and I go into these and we're not exactly sure how to verbalize it or how to articulate it perfectly like we may think. And I think just sometimes through verbalizing it, we start to understand. We can do only so much in our heads. We have to actually get it out there in words, say it, and then it starts to kind of gel, and we're like, okay, we can whittle this down and make it more real that way. And I think a lot of that happens all the time with us, you know, sometimes a big way, sometimes in smaller ways, but I think we're constantly doing that. And I think that's a great lesson in and of itself.
Right.
As we teach.
Things become more clear. As we start to articulate them, they become more clear. Like, I feel a little bit like you and I were kind of processing through something that became more clear as we discussed it.
I agree. And I love that. And led by the Spirit. And that's the way to do it. Good. Yes. All right, everyone. Thanks for listening. If you would share this with others, if you feel that they would be of benefit of this discussion and even the last part one of experiences, because this is part two. Thank you, Julie. Yes, actually, I didn't know what part two was exactly going to look like. And so it's not like I was like, oh, you took that one away from me, Julie. Oh, my goodness. No, this is exactly what it needed to be. I appreciate that. Thank you. Take care, everyone. Until next time.